Welcome, everyone, to Animal Voices. Yes, and those sounds that you heard at the beginning of the program, those were elephants talking to each other. Captain Paul Watson, founding member of Greenpeace Foundation and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, he said, "I have been honored to serve the whales, the dolphins, the seals, and all other creatures on this earth. Their beauty, intelligence, and spirit have inspired me. These beings have spoken to me, touched me, and I have been rewarded by friendship with many members of different species. If the whales can survive and flourish, if the seals continue to live and give birth, and I can contribute to ensuring their future prosperity, I will be happy forever." Welcome, everyone, to Animal Voices. You are listening to CFRO Radio 102.7 in Vancouver, also known as Co-op Radio. This program is presented to you by volunteer members of the Vancouver Humane Society, Earth Save Canada, and the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society. My name is Carl Loskin. Alan Jensen is in the control room. And in the studio today, we have John Pranger, Marge Adams, and Jenna Hunt. At the halfway program today, at this program, we will contact Jody Gorin, who represents many views of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and who will let us know how the low-carb diet fad is meeting its end. Dash, dash, dash. You've heard it. Bankruptcy. Well, we want to know why. Animal Voices wants to know why. We have a few announcements, and many of them, this program is, of course, repeated on Monday, so this will be happening this coming Saturday. It's the 6th of August, and it is World Animal Day. Marge, over to you.
Yes, thanks, Carl. Yeah, I have two items here. The first is Animal Rights Day, which is on tomorrow, as Carl said, the 6th of August. And it will be a big one this year. We have 10 different animal protection groups who will be out on the street with their representatives to discuss items and a lot of literature. So we heartily invite you to go down to the Robson Street side of the Vancouver Art Gallery to see the event, which will have groups ranging all the way from Sea Shepherd to Fur Bearer Defenders to Vancouver Rabbit Rescue, Vancouver Humane Society, and six others. So that it's going to be well worth getting down to, and I would really encourage you to go. It's going to be from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, August the 6th, Robson Street side of the Art Gallery. One other item I want to mention is an interview with Peter Fricker of the Vancouver Humane Society about the proposed bylaw that we've often mentioned on this program before. With the city of Vancouver, we're hoping that this bylaw regarding animals will be passed perhaps sometime this fall. But there's an interesting item about it explaining it, and especially it focuses on exotic animals. And Vancouver is the only municipality locally that does not have an exotic animal bylaw. Very important. Just to give you an idea of the importance, the Rainforest Reptile Refuge. Sorry, that's a tricky one. Let us know that they had 4,200 calls last year for the placement of animals that were no longer reptiles, that were no longer wanted. So that it is a very big issue. Thanks, Carl.
Yes, support the Reptile Refuge. They do wonderful work. And John, yes.
Yeah, well, I'd like to apologize personally for not having read my mail soon enough to make an announcement about the fundraiser that the Rainforest Reptile Refuge was having, which was featuring British rock music by Radio 1, and that was held on Granville Street. And I hope they had good success, and I apologize once more.
Hey, you know, a great event that's being sponsored by Co-op Radio is this coming Sunday. That's August the 7th. That is the Under the Volcano. And it's a wonderful venue in the park with many tables. And there's music goes on till it gets dark. So it starts from noon till past midnight. And it's sponsored by your radio station, community-based Co-op Radio. So that's maybe an event worthwhile. Well, there were many articles in the newspapers this past weekend. We're going to cover some of them, and I think many of them really impact so much on our wildlife and on ourselves as a species. How are we to survive? And that involves, of course, the biotech claims, and the question is whether this is science or science fiction. The patenting of life, corporate ownership and manipulation of our genetic heritage is one of the greatest threats ever imposed. And that was said by in 1998 at the International Forum on Food and Agriculture. And Dr. Pustazestai, he said, "We're eating things today we've never eaten before. And I challenge anyone who can predict the consequences, especially for our immune systems."
Another well-known name, Dr. Ho, who is a molecular geneticist at the Open University in the United Kingdom, said genetic engineering is bad science working with big business for quick profit against the public good.
Now, this is a quote from a professor at Columbia University. "We have such a miserably poor understanding of how the organism developed from its DNA that I am surprised if we don't get one rude shock after another. Science has transgressed a barrier that should have remained inviolate. You can stop splitting the atom, but you cannot recall a new form of life. An irreversible attack on the biosphere is something so unthinkable to previous generations that I wish mine had not been guilty of it."
And this is from Dr. G. Wald, professor emeritus in biology at the Harvard University and the Nobel laureate in medicine. "Our morality up to now has been to go ahead without restriction to learn all that we can about nature. Restructuring nature was not part of the bargain. Going in this direction may not only be unwise, but dangerous."
And Dr. David Suzuki said, "Any politician or scientist who tells you these products are safe is either stupid or lying."
Yes, well, what an indictment of where science is going. So, do we have any other wise statements here?
Well, here's something about Monsanto, Carl, that I think is interesting. Monsanto has filed several patents on breeding herds of pigs. The only invention is a particular combination of natural breeding methods and ways of screening for particular genetic characteristics. But they are claiming patent on the resulting pigs and its genetic makeup, meaning anyone raising pigs with similar characteristics will be violating their patent. And this is only the latest attempt by Monsanto to monopolize a food source, other examples being their relentless attempt to create global hegemony around single genetically engineered seed species that they own, without regard for negative environmental and biodiversity impacts.
There has been a culture of deception in which the government keeps the public at bay while serving private interests. And this was Dr. Brill Edwards, and she said, "I left Health Canada because I felt a duty to speak about safety abuses I'd witnessed at Health Canada."
A Dr. Apotheker, who is an applied physicochemical biologist in Paris, France, said, "4 years is 1 billion times faster than evolution itself. GMOs are now over billions of hectares in contact with natural ecosystems. The difference in time frame shows a handful of transnationals are conducting an extremely serious epidemiological experiment on the entire human race." And you know, several problems have been connected with BT rice grown in India now, and it's found that we need that the plant becomes resistant to, or rather the insecticide becomes no longer effective at a certain stage of the plant's life, and so it's found that more pesticides are necessary in order to maintain this fiction that these reduces this pesticide use. But the EPA, for example, has admitted that American children receive 50% of their lifetime cancer risk in the first 2 years of life. The U.S. Center for Disease Control reports that one of the main sources of pesticide exposure for U.S. children comes from the food they eat. And according to the Food and Drug Administration, half of all produce currently tested in grocery stores contain measurable residues of pesticides. Laboratory tests of 8 industry-leader baby foods reveal the presence of 16 pesticides, including 3 carcinogens. According to the EPA's guidelines for carcinogen risk assessment, children receive 50% of their lifetime cancer risks in the first 2 years of life. In blood samples of children aged 2 to 4, concentrations of pesticide residues are 6 times higher in children eating conventionally farmed fruits and vegetables compared with those eating organic food. If you want to look up the reference, it's on www.organicconsumers.org.
Also, there's been an issue here with cloning a dog. It's in actually yesterday's Vancouver Sun. A South Korean scientist, this researcher says he has duplicated an Afghan hound only to investigate human disease. But John has always told us how effective that is. But many of the animal welfare groups criticized the experiment by saying that this technology could lead to a brave new world of puppy production if it were hijacked by profiteers seeking to use cloning for the pet trade. And that was in yesterday's Vancouver Sun, Thursday. So John, over to Jenna, and you have something interesting here. You have not only a smile on your face, but let's have it.
Well, in line with my previous entries here, I'm going to put you in the mind of a cat. Now, this is from The Silent Meow by Paul Gallico, and this is a bit lighthearted to have a little humor in the break. When I was a very young kitten, I had the misfortune to lose my mother and find myself alone in the world at the age of 6 weeks. However, I was not unduly disturbed by this, since I was intelligent, not ill-favored, resourceful, and full of confidence in myself. Also, I had the advantage of several weeks of instruction from my mother before her unfortunate encounter with a motor car. After a week or so of living in the country, off a most revolting diet of grubs and insects, I determined to take over a family and become a house cat, and I set about immediately to achieve my ends. This I have done, but first a brief account of the manner in which I took over my own family, who shall be nameless, since it is not my purpose to embarrass them. Well, then, I emerged from the woods hungry and disgusted with nature in the raw to see, standing in a clearing, a small, pleasant-looking white house with green-painted shutters and a barn nearby, flower and vegetable garden, small grape arbors, fish ponds, etc. The house and the grounds were neat and well-kept, and they obviously belonged to persons of some affluence. An expensive car in the garage confirmed this. You know the saying, sentiment opens no can lobster. If you want to take over a poor family, that's your business. It wasn't going to be mine. I went to the back door of the house and reconnoitered. A man and his wife were having breakfast inside. There didn't seem to be any evidence of children about or servants either, which was all to the good. Children are all right eventually and can be handled, but it is better, if possible, to take over your family before they arrive, and servants can give you a lot of trouble. Anyway, I went to the door, and they looked up at me from their breakfast. I knew exactly how I appeared to them from the other side of the screen door. Irresistible! I pretended to lose my grip on the mesh, and I fell off, and then climbed back up again, crying all the time. The woman said, "Oh, look, the poor little thing, it wants to come in. Maybe it's hungry. I'll give it some milk." Just as I expected, I had her. All I needed was to get one paw inside the door, and, however, it wasn't going to be all that simple. The man! He began to shout, roar, scrape his chair, and thump the table with his fists, bellowing that he hated cats and he wouldn't have one in the house. Then he went into all those boring clichés about how we were a nuisance, got into everything, clawed the furniture, and smelled at the joint. He kept yelling, "Nix, nothing doing. If you've got to feed it, give it some milk at the barn and then get rid of it, but it doesn't come in here." "Oh ho," I said to myself, "you'll want some dealing with, my friend." and I'm the one who knows how to do it. You know, you may not believe this, but I was almost pleased with this opposition. It was a challenge. If there's anything that's fun to work with, it's a man that thinks he's a real cat hater. In the meantime, while these thoughts were going through my head, I kept falling off and climbing back onto the screen door, still crying heartbreakingly. The woman opened it and picked me off, saying to him, "Oh, don't make such a fuss, darling. I'll just give her some milk. We'll put her out afterwards." The point you have gathered from this is that the more men rage, fuss, shout, and yell, the less attention one pays to them. For although he was still clamoring and protesting, where was I? Inside the door, lapping up milk out of a saucer.
Thank you, Jenna. Jenna has become a regular contributor to Animal Voices. So over to you, Marge.
Oh, here's an interesting item, I thought, regarding nutrition. Contrary to what we have been taught about nutrition, the majority of us are still kept in the dark about what optimum diet for us consists of. This is not surprising when you realize that most governments that provide us with our nutritional guidelines are connected with very powerful organizations such as the meat, dairy, and egg industries, who not only expect but demand that their products are promoted on dietary guidelines. Culture and tradition keep us tightly glued to addictions and unhealthy habits. I remember when I was a child being told that from the guidelines, Canadian guidelines, that I should eat two slices of bread at every meal, and I guess that was a representation from the wheat industry. Okay, Carol, thanks.
Yes, and over to John Pranger.
An item from China. Environmental group Greenpeace said it had found GM rice, genetically modified rice, not approved for human consumption, on sale at a Carrefour supermarket in central China. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right, Carrefour. The rice was discovered at the French retailer's store in Wuhan City in Hubei province. Since April, Greenpeace China researchers have uncovered illegal rice being grown in Hubei. The rice produced allergic reaction when tested on mice. Well, of course, if it hadn't, would that mean it was safe? So these stupid, bogus tests are not going to solve the problem of whether or not we these foods are safe. And the biotech industry and its supporters like to present it as a science-based industry whose reputation has suffered only because its scientifically validated claims have been undermined by emotional appeals and disinformation campaigns. But in fact, the reverse is the case, and nowhere can that be seen more clearly than in India, where Monsanto has been using every trick in the book to promote its GM cotton seeds, while a series of scientific studies have documented the failure of its GM cotton seeds, the BT cotton, so-called. In the most recently published study, government scientists at India's premier cotton research institute have shown that BT cotton doesn't have the necessary toxicity to kill the boll worms it targets. But Monsanto's Indian subsidiary, Monsanto Mahico, unabashed has been hyping GM seeds to India's poor farmers as magical, as celebrity endorsed, and now as sexy. For its promotional work this spring in the Punjab, where GM cotton varieties have recently been approved for the first time, the company hired Bollywood star Nana Patekar to give glamour to its products. It also made use of Guru Nanak in its sales pitch to the state Sikh farmers in order to try and give its seeds a miraculous aura. And now it has emerged that the company even resorted to using dancing girls in its promotional tours of Punjabi villages. There's a striking contrast between the lavish nature of Monsanto's promotional campaigns in India and its flat refusal to pay compensation to the farmers who suffered terrible losses as a result of cultivating its seeds. That refusal to pay compensation for the harm it has done has led the government in Andhra Pradesh to ban Monsanto from the state. Hey,
here we go.
If you want to read the article, www.gmwatch.org, gmwatch.org.
Well, wonderful contributions. I hope you got more goodies here to go. I picked up an article this week, and it was a result of having to gone to see that wonderful movie, which is showing in most of the movie houses in Vancouver at this time. It's called The March of the Penguins, and these are the penguins in Antarctica. It's a wonderful documentary. The scenery is absolutely incredible. But more incredible than the scenery is how these penguins survive and raise their young, and how they pass the egg from one partner to another, and how they travel approximately where they protect themselves in one of the most harshest environment. It can be like with a wind factor, minus 80 degrees Celsius. They all huddle together in one spot, and they carry the egg with them, and then the young they keep underneath underneath them and protect them. And of course there's a mortality rate there with the cold. And one of the parents take turns to do the long trek to the ocean and feed on krill, and then walk back the 75 kilometers to where the penguins are and regurgitate the food. And it is so amazing. The March of the Penguins, it's a wonderful documentary. And it's very relevant today because the scientists are watching the collapse of the Antarctic ice shelf and what global consequences one can have are a result of that. So the international team of researchers have collected data, and the ice shelf, which has been relatively intact for at least 10,000 years or so, seems to have changed dramatically. And they're not quite sure whether this gigantic, it's called southern part of the Larsen ice shelf, which is the coldest part of Antarctica, is going to break up as a result of global warming. To give you an idea of what's happening there, in the past five years, the shelf shrunk by 5,700 square kilometers. And that's what the scientists have found, and they're not sure whether it's going to break up or not. And they say, as the ice shelves are disintegrating, the glaciers that are feeding them from the land are surging forward. And so it's not only the water and the climate on top of the glacier, but it's also the temperatures of the ocean are eroding the glaciers in itself. So, so that's also features the aspect of what we're doing to the oceans. Many people have never stopped to think about, we've said this many times on Animal Voices before. I think fish have feelings too. John, what do you say? Do fish have feelings?
Fish have feelings. They got eyeballs, they got nerves, presumably. I imagine they must have feelings as well.
Yes, and do you think they get hurt, their feelings get hurt when people do things like sticking hooks in their mouths?
Well, I've never insulted a fish, but that might hurt, yes.
You know, I never forget the story when I stopped eating fish, and it was a result of going to the Great Barrier Reef north of, east of Cairns, and we were with a biologist on the boat and everything. And when we came back, I said to the biologist, well, you know, the coral reef is just unbelievable. It's so fantastic. The colors and the vivid. Sad to think that much of this, the coral reefs, one think thrives in warm temperature. But in fact, because of global warming and the increase in the temperatures of the ocean, much of the coral reef is at risk. And it's one of the largest ecosystems on the planet, is the coral reefs.
And the reef itself is alive, isn't it? The reef
itself is alive. It is alive. So don't step on it. You can kill it. So I was paddling around with my flippers in the shallow waters on the barrier reef. And I went back to the biologist and I said, well, you know, there was a little tiny little fish kept on nipping me all the time. So he says, oh, did it look like this, a small black and this and that? I said, yes, you know where it is. I said, well, you know, this fish was so persistent that I put my flipper. Well, you know, things you attach to your feet so you can swim easy. What do you call them?
Flippers.
Flipper. Mm-hmm. I put my flipper in his face. So he said, yes, you know, these animals are really territorial. You,
wow.
Carl Loskin from Animal Voices.
And he's 6'5", folks.
You have invaded his territory. Mm. And they will let you know, and they will keep on nipping you. But it's not serious. It's just a friendly little nip. So he said, well, you know, when the sharks go by, they will even nip the sharks.
Wow.
Because they know that they're so small. The shark won't go for them. They only go for bigger prey. So fish are smart. But yeah. Before this program's over, I'll tell you another story about a fish that seemed to recognize me. But we're going to go over to Alan Jensen, and we're going to have a little music, and then we're going to have Mr. Gorin from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. We're going to have him online. And would you believe it, after all the hype about the so-called fad, the fad diet, low carb, and the truth is coming out. Truth will prevail. They are going into bankruptcy, and they are being sued by somebody in spite of going bankrupt, because there's a principle involved. Over to Alan and a bit of music. So, there we go.
In a rising gale on the fishing. she growled. But they're nothing but shrimp here and no damn birds. Tell me where was Smiley, Lord, that's all I heard.
On the fishing ground, on Smiley's trail.
Down around Hippo, in a rising gale. On the fishing grounds, on Smiley's trail. Lord, we ain't quit until we got a fish for
to Animal Voices, coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. We've had a little difficulty contacting Jody Gorin, who represents the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and we will try again. His phone just seems to ring. So, let's go on with the show. Many of our Animal Voices programs are listed on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And also, there's a special section there for the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society. So if you go to animalvoices.org/ADAV, then you'll see many of the issues which are often covered here on Animal Voices on Co-op Radio. And by the way, we had some music before, and that was... those were the sounds of whales. And Alan, maybe you can tell us, what was the name of that recording there? If you could just mention that. Yes, we have it right here. It's Caring for Our Coast. And it's Caring for Our Canadian Music, January the 3rd. Caring for Our Coast. And I can't make out the person who produces that. It's we played an excerpt.
Cat 14 and Cat 1.
Yeah. Okay. So those were sounds of whales. If you were curious what those sounds were, the magical waves, whales talking to each other. So we'll go on with the show and over to Marge.
Oh, thanks, Carl. You were talking a little earlier before our musical break about fish and your contact with a fish. I thought that there's some items that were interesting on www.fishinghurts.com. Now, I'd like to start with one item. Many people have never stopped to think about it, but fish are smart, interesting animals with their own unique personalities, just like the dogs and cats we share our homes with. Did you know that fish can learn to avoid nets by watching other fish in their group, and that they can recognize individual shoal mates? Some fish gather information by eavesdropping on others, and some, such as the South African fish, I'm not sure what type that is, but of South African fish, that lays eggs on leaves so that they can be carried to a safe place. They even use tools.
Now, fish live in water that's so polluted you would never dream of drinking it, but you're ingesting this toxic brew, bacteria, contaminants, heavy metals, and all that, every time you eat fish. Fish's bodies absorb toxic chemicals in the water around them, and the chemicals become more concentrated as they move up the food chain. Big fish eat little fish, with the bigger fish, such as tuna and salmon, absorbing chemicals from all the other fish they eat. But would you eat something fished out of the city sewer system? According to the Norwegian government, the salmon and trout farms in Norway alone produce roughly the same amount of sewage as New York City. I'm going to repeat that. The Norwegian government has found that the salmon and trout farms in Norway alone produce roughly the same amount of sewage as New York City. The massive amount of raw sewage, dead fish corpses, and antibiotic-laden fish food sludge settling below farm salmon cages can actually cause the ocean floor to rot, destroying vital habitat with the already strained marine ecosystem and turning coastal waters into open sewers.
You have to think about that, don't you, when you recall that we're often told that fish is brain food. You wonder what the sewage does to the brain.
Mercury. Sure, many of our PCBs. And why there was an article in the Vancouver Sun about the bears consuming a high diet of fish here. And, I think we have it right here. There was an article this week in one of the papers.
There's one.
John, have you got it?
Right there. I don't have the actual article in the paper, but scientists proved that people who eat only 2 servings of fish a month have difficulty recalling information that they learned just 30 minutes earlier. That's the effect of PCBs and high levels of mercury, lead, and PCBs in their blood. Which the PCBs are synthetic chemicals that pollute water and concentrated in fish flesh act like hormones, which wreaks havoc on the nervous system and contributes to a variety of illnesses beyond forgetfulness and vertigo, including cancer, infertility, and other sexual problems.
So this week's Globe and Mail had a half-page article with a bear with a salmon in its mouth, and it said, West Coast grizzlies eat salmon almost exclusively at this time of year. A diet that makes them vulnerable to contaminants from the ocean. And it says that tests have shown that this is a poison feast of salmon contaminates BC grizzlies. That was the headline. Let me just repeat the headline in this week's Globe and Mail, August the 5th. It said, poison feast of salmon contaminates BC grizzlies. And it just shows you how interdependent we are and how it moves up the food chain. You know, as you were earlier on describing, the small fish, the bigger fish eating the small fish, and along we go. Grizzly bears feasting on Pacific salmon provide iconic images of natural bounty that wildlife photographers have captured for generations. But a new study suggests something is wrong with the picture. The grizzly bears in British Columbia that feed heavily on salmon each fall are doing more than loading up on nutrients for hibernation. Research from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans and the University of Victoria shows that the annual feast of salmon is also loading the bears with contaminants, chemicals that affect the reproductive abilities of young females. These bears are eating 7 or 8 adult salmon a day, so they can really gorge themselves, said Peter Ross, a marine mammal toxicologist. Well, we have reached Jody Gorin, Jody Gorin represents many of the views of the People's Physicians Committee for the Responsible Medicine, an organization with some 5,000 physicians as members, and a wonderful organization. So Jody Gorin represents many of these views, and Jody will let us know today about the low-carb fad diet, how it's meeting its end. Hello, Jody, are you there? Hello, Jody. So, hello, Jody, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to Animal Voices. Well, maybe you can give us a little background about the Atkins diet and the low-fat carb diet and how PCRM and you are being involved.
All right. Well, we're involved together because I believe that I have a medical history which shows that when I was on the diet for 2.5 years, the diet gave me heart disease because of its strong reliance upon eating saturated fat in place of carbohydrates, most of the saturated fat coming from animal sources. And I have a medical history which shows that I had no heart disease before going on the diet, but 2.5 years into it, I developed what they call angina. Turns out after some medical testing, I had a 99% blockage in a major coronary artery, which almost killed me. And then within 60 days of going off the diet and eating a very low saturated fat diet, primarily from plant sources, my cholesterol went back to the low level that it had been before. So I know it was the diet that almost killed me.
So what is the misconception about carbs? It's obviously people are putting them all into one bracket, but carbs are actually good for you.
Absolutely.
So let's make that distinction here.
The distinction should be between complex carbs, which are good, and simple carbs like sugar and white flour, which are basically empty calories for the body.
So what we're looking at is that the carb that is not beneficial to people are these white breads, these refined products.
Exactly.
And, with all the nutrients taken out. And in that sense, maybe Atkins was not all that wrong, but people have this myth, but you're replacing another evil for something.
Well, that's certainly true, except Atkins might have been correct to a point on carbohydrates, but where he went wrong was in substituting for the carbohydrates increases in saturated fat, primarily from animal products. That was his downfall to his theory. While many people supposedly could benefit from his diet, there were at least a third of the people who would go on it who would have a very bad effect from the increased intake of saturated fat, like myself, and it could kill them. You know, it's one thing for a diet not to work, or for a diet not to help you lose weight. It's another thing if the side effect of the diet is your death.
So now we're looking at the death of the Atkins diet, is it? And so many people, there was so much publicity. I went to a drugstore here in Vancouver, I'll mention the name, London Drugs, they had a whole rack of books all about the Atkins diet. I mean, it took off like crazy. Why did it take off like that? And I mean, why were you attracted to it?
Well, I think the biggest thing about the diet was that it was counterintuitive, meaning that people supposedly could eat all of this bad food or food that was relatively bad is in as great a quantity as they wanted as long as they didn't eat carbohydrates. And that somehow you could eat all the cheeseburgers and all the steaks and all the meat and all the mayonnaise and all of this and all the bacon and eggs and whatever, and you'd be fine as long as you cut out the carbs. And people just liked that thought. I mean, I found it kind of attractive. I believe that Atkins, as a medical doctor with 30 years' experience in the diet, he had 25,000 patients. And I assumed he knew something from those patients that nobody else knew. But that's not true. He was overselling the safety of the diet, and he was causing great harm to a lot of people. And his diet got what it deserved.
And he did it to himself, too. He died at an early age. And what did he die of?
Apparently something related to a heart problem, something related to blocked arteries. So, you know, what goes around comes around. It happened to him, but the problem is that the diet was being oversold from a safety standpoint. If they had only talked about cutting out the simple carbohydrates, again, the white flour, the sugar and such, and if you're going to be eating additional fat, it should be the monounsaturated fats, It should be the fats, perhaps, that might be found in fish or something of that nature, without the red meat and the saturated fat. The diet would have probably worked for me, and it probably would have worked for many other people.
So, in fact, people were losing weight. Did you lose weight on the Atkins diet?
I absolutely lost weight on the Atkins diet. The problem was I wasn't healthy.
Right.
I was hurting myself in other areas, but I did lose weight.
It's what you can't see. Now, Jody, we have a panel here who would love to ask you questions, but one further question is, to put this in perspective, is that am I correct in saying that you are suing the bankrupt Atkins diet people?
I'm suing both the company, who I've been suing them for the past year, as well as the estate of the late Robert Atkins. I'm suing for less than $15,000 U.S. It's a relatively small amount because we're not looking for money. We're looking to put a warning on the diet to say that it could be dangerous, and that's what we're attempting to do. And even now with them in bankruptcy, we still are continuing the effort in the suit because we still want to see the warning.
So it's a matter of principle that people need to be re-educated here.
Exactly, and it was always a matter of principle.
Now, Jody, what if the proteins were replaced with plant-based proteins such as beans and so on, legumes?
I'm not a nutritionist.
Okay.
As long as the saturated fat component was not there, I think it probably would have worked well, at least in my case.
Now, what about, is this Dr. Atkins the same doctor who wrote a book on amygdalin therapy, or in other words, Laetrile, do you know?
I cannot be sure about that.
Okay.
I can't address that.
One other question I had was about the carbohydrates that they used, or the sweetener that they used in their cereals. What can you tell us about this sweetener that they used?
I believe the main one is sucralose.
And is that a safe chemical substitute for sugar?
Well, what is safe these days?
I don't know. I don't know that these things can be proven either one way or the other.
Exactly. They say it's so much like sugar, it's made from sugar, except it's a chemical feast of some sort.
Well, it didn't taste very good to me when I sampled the particular, I don't know what it was, some breakfast cereal.
Exactly.
It had a very chemical taste.
Yes, I have a friend who has been on the Atkins diet for some time, and I spoke, knowing that you were going to be on our show, I spoke to her about it, and she said, well, an awful lot of the criticism is based on the first 2 weeks of the diet. After that, it's moderated, but maybe not very well moderated. Could you speak to that?
Yes, certainly. What's moderated is the amount of carbohydrates you can still have in your diet. That's true. I was able to eat more in the way of carbs, but that didn't keep me from being able to eat as much saturated fat as I wanted to. And the problem was not so much the lack of carbohydrates or the slight increase. It was the fact that I was eating so much in the way of saturated fat because I was on the maintenance phase of the diet for 2 years. It was in the first 6 months, I lost the 10 pounds that I wanted to lose, and I maintained my weight at that point for another 2 years being in the maintenance phase. So certainly I was eating slightly more carbs just to be in a balanced state where you weren't eating any more than necessary to keep your weight in balance without gaining weight. But I was still eating all of the saturated fat, which was still allowed, and which was creating the problem for my arteries.
I see. So there's never a restriction on the saturated fats then.
Exactly.
In the diet.
Never. In fact, what they tell you as far as your cholesterol level is that you should keep checking your cholesterol and checking your cholesterol. They never tell you at any point in time should you get off the diet. My cholesterol started off at 146. Within 60 days of going on the diet, it was 230. By the time I had my angioplasty, where they put in a stent, 2.5 years later, my cholesterol was down to 209. So it was gradually going down. Perhaps if I had waited longer till it got below 200, I would probably have been dead by then.
That's the risk you were running.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for that.
Now, it's holiday time, and many people have a bit of spare time to watch some movies. Maybe you can say something about the popular movie that was called Super Size Me. Do I have the name right?
Super Size Me was a marvelous film. I saw it. It said a great deal about what can happen to the body in a short period of time by eating a lot of saturated fat. His cholesterol level went up enormously, and he did that all in 30 days. So it doesn't take long, nor does it take long to develop the atherosclerotic plaque in the arteries sufficient enough to cause pain and potentially death. It doesn't have to be a lifelong process. For me, it took 2.5 years, because 6 months before I went on the Atkins diet, I had a CT heart scan done, computerized tomography heart scan, which showed that I had 000, meaning no blockages, no calcium buildup, no atherosclerotic plaque, and I had a 95% likelihood that in the next 3 to 5 years I would not develop heart disease. But, of course, it didn't take into consideration that I'd be going on the Atkins diet. And 2.5 years later, the diet again almost killed me.
Now, if people would like to have more information, that's they can go to the webpage of and also learn about this lawsuit. Where can they get that?
They can go to www.p as in Paul, C as in Charlie, R as in Robert, M as in Mary, .org. PCRM.org.
It's a great web page for all health-related subjects. Now, Dr. Neil Barnard was one of the founders of PCRM.org, great web page.
That's correct.
And he said, well, we have so fascinated by your experience here today, Jody Gorin, but he said that children have been repeatedly exploited in marketing arrangements with the dairy industry. Well, what a surprise. The dairy yep. industry, the sacred cow, Coca-Cola, Krispy Kreme donuts, and fast food chains. It's not only the children who are vulnerable, but it's adults who have been caught in this, convincing at times, they seem to hold on to what they do. Maybe just comment on this, the aspect of what we're doing to our children and obesity.
Well, everything seems to be interrelated. Diets generally don't work well in the long term. Any diet can help you lose weight, but the issue is whether you're healthy at the end of the day. The food industry has gone out of its way to tout products such as milk and sugary foods and such, so much advertising that has affected children. Why are children obese? Why are adults obese? PCRM has recently sued the dairy industry because of their claims that eating several servings of dairy products a day would help you lose weight. A lot of it is lies, misinformation, simply to sell products, simply to make money. That was the problem with the Atkins people, that they were more interested in making money from their products than they were in people's health. So, take whatever you read from the food industry with a grain of salt, because they have their own vested interests in mind.
Unfortunately, these interests have crept into the new food pyramid, haven't they?
Exactly.
So yesterday in the National Post, which is a national newspaper, it said there that in spite of this, they were it seemed to be supporting the Atkins theories here, and they said that people have to learn to eat a variety of foods, which is correct, strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, all those wonderful things. But, of course, the dairy industry, like you just mentioned, has such incredible power. And they're promoting healthy foods in the schools in British Columbia now. At a school near me, there's a gigantic poster with the dairy industry as a healthy food. So I appreciate what you said about, the thing here. Maybe you can just enlarge on that a bit.
Well, it's a matter of letting people know that there is a dark side to what people have generally thought are good and healthy foods like milk. Apparently, there's a great deal of research to show that milk is not as helpful as previously assumed, and milk has a great many aspects that are bad for both children and adults, and that the milk industry has a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. And I'm glad that there are radio stations such as yours who want to give people the correct information on which to base their choices.
Thank you to PCRM, and thank you to you. And we're running out of time. You've been listening to Jody Gorin, and he represents many of the views of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
And so, just in the parting minute, few minutes here, have we got some words of wisdom here? Thank you for listening, everybody.
And just a reminder to go out tomorrow to the animal rights demonstration and literature tables, etc. Tomorrow between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Robson Street side of the Vancouver Art Gallery, and that's Saturday, August the 6th, so we don't confuse people listening to this replayed on Monday.
Thank you, and over to Alan Jensen in the control room. Thank you for being here. And we've had Marge Adams, John Pranger, my name is Carl Loskin, and Jenna Hunt making the contribution. Thank you for your